Hey everyone, and welcome back to The Advisor. My name is Lisa Urbanski. I am so excited for our guest today. I just want to send a quick shout out to Spreaker iHeartRadio. Thank you for your sponsorship. And to our audience, please like and subscribe. Without you, we cannot continue to grow. Back to our guest today. So I am here with Brandon Steiner. He is the sports marketing mogul who built a $50 million collectible empire business. He traded boardrooms recently for NYPD squad cars, offering a rare outsider's perspective on urban policing. So, through ride-alongs across five precincts, he wrote a book on that experience, and it is an unfiltered look at the complex realities of what officers face in these communities. And he's here to talk all about it. His book is going to be released in September of 2025, but we get a first sneak peek into this and into what that experience would have been like. So welcome, Brandon.
Well, thanks for having me, Lisa. Appreciate it. I haven't given up my day job yet, but this was a nighttime second job driving around in these police cars. And one thing I just wanted to mention right at the beginning, I mean, it was always a dream to be a police officer, when you're a kid. This time I wrote this book and dug into this thing because I wanted to find out what's going on with urban policing. I mean, there's no respect for police. There's definitely a problem in these communities. Maybe there's, the pancake's flat, but I always say there's two sides. And let me go find out the side, the community side, like what are the police doing that's rubbing some of the people in these communities the wrong way? Where are we in all this? Because I think, after you look at family and health, safety, I mean, what good is having a lot of money and this and that if you're not safe? And most people, although crime is down a little bit nationally, at least in the States, they don't feel safe. And so I decided, I went to a whole bunch. I did a small city upstate in Syracuse, and I did 12, 14 ride-alongs and a day in the police academy. I was just trying to get an idea. I took down a gang one morning in the Bronx, pretty dangerous.
Wow.
Went to the UN where they have a whole security detail with riot and protest control. I really dug my put my arms around all the different aspects of what it takes to keep you safe. And the scary thing is, there's more danger in some of these smaller cities than the larger ones. Like city, New York City's got probably one of the best police forces in the world. People come from all over to get training and insight from them. But the same kind of shenanigans and some really bad stuff is going on in a lot of these smaller cities, which is why I tell people, like, don't neglect what's going on with policing in this world, because there's a cr the crime is coming to you. If you look at almost all police departments, definitely in this country, but I think in a whole, I think in a lot of countries, policing is a there's a shortage. The people are retiring or taking their quick exit faster than they can be hired. So we really have a tremendous shortage of police officers, at least in the States. Anyway, I did the one thing, which I rarely do, and that was
Oh.
I didn't listen to my wife. And generally it's very painful when for those of you out there that are married, I don't know how it is for you, but like it kills me that my wife is like right always. Like a hundred things, like once in a while she'll let me be right because she was gonna be right anyway, but she just wanted me to feel good. But this time she's like, I don't want you to do that. I don't want you to do this book. And I was like, I think I'm doing it anyway. Like, so I wanted to
Oh.
see what was going on in these neighborhoods where you see crazy amounts of crime, gang violence. But also, what I found out that was extremely eye-opening was that there's a tremendous amount of hopelessness and below level, third world country level living, desperateness, that people are not living in that are 10 miles away from affluent, very affluent people. And
Right.
they're living below the poverty level that, on insane levels. And some of that desperateness gets confused, and sometimes the police were scapegoats. So it was extremely eye-opening, this experience, extremely dangerous. My wife was right. I probably shouldn't have done it. I wouldn't do it again if I had the chance. I never felt safe for a minute in most of these ride-alongs. I don't know if you've ever had 8 hours where your life could be in danger. 8 straight hours, and I went back 15 times for more. Like, I'm a pretty tough guy. I'm a Brooklyn, New York guy. You know, you hear about guys from Brooklyn and you know how tough we are. I gotta tell you, man, I was scared to death, you know,
Jeez.
95% of the time. And rightfully so. There's a lot of it's tough to put the criminals away. And I have a lot of empathy for a lot of these people that are living in these neighborhoods that are good people. And it's being ruined by a few of these gangs, a few of these people that make life really miserable because they kind of get away with, they skirt in and out by committing crimes to get away with it. Or when you lock them up, they get right back out. So it was extremely eye-opening. My fourth book, by the way, it's my fourth book. So I've written some books. This is a book that I'm extremely proud of, mainly because it covers a topic that's extremely easy to read and it's eye-opening.
I wanted to say, police get a bad rap. The people talk about how they don't do anything, or they're spending their time doing the wrong things. But you're right, like they do a lot of things. What do you remember your very first ride along?
I'll never
Like, what was
forget it.
the, yeah, tell us.
Well, on the way to the ride along, you know, I talk to myself a lot. I'm not gonna lie, I'm a little messed up that way. I mean, I'm constantly in conversation with myself about things. So as I'm driving there, I'm like, all right, you know, because I've done leadership class for the police. You know, I do a lot of speaking around the country, and it was a very successful leadership class. So I got permission, a rare permission, to really just do and have access to do anything I wanted to understand how the police work. So here I am. I gotten this permission from the commissioner and I was excited. And then on my way there, I'm like, shit, like, what am I going to do when I get there? Like, am I going to be in the car? Am I going to get out? Is this going to be dangerous? And literally halfway there, I stopped and turned around. And then, you know, I don't know if anybody follows me, you know, but one of my books is called You Gotta Have Balls, which is my mother's favorite line, which is be fearless and don't be afraid to, you know, do what you gotta do and do it the right way. So I turn the car back around and I get to the station and they give me a police jacket. And I'm like, I'm thinking like I'll probably be in the back of the car observing from the back of the car, which can't be that bad. And sure as hell, the first situation we got into, and this is like the highest level of crime in this one precinct in the 4-6. I mean, it is really dangerous. And the first thing is like, let's go. Go where? And he's like, we're going in. And sure enough, I mean, you know, it was I think that particular case was a domestic violence and a robbery involved. And we went into this like really dark building. So it was really scary. It was very, very scary. And then this thing started popping. Like, you know, it was a car accident. You realize everything that goes into just a stupid car accident with the paperwork and getting both sides of the story. And then you go into these buildings in the Bronx and they're really long highways, very dimly lit, one elevator going up there. And what's weird is that you go into these buildings, there's a problem in an apartment. And this is where you get ambushed. So I'm like, shit, I'm like, we can get, you know, and then you knock on the door and it's not one family. You're in a 3 or 4 bedroom apartment and there's four families, an entire family living in each bedroom. So immediately you're not like going into the apartment because God knows what's going on in there. And it's just one thing after the other. Like, and there's a lot of good people that live in these neighborhoods. That's what's such a bummer. And there's nowhere for them to go, Lisa. Like, there's nowhere for them to be. Like, there's 200,000 people living in a. I asked you before how many people live in Winnipeg. And I think you mentioned like about 1 million people, right? In a 2 mile radius, and I'm sure Winnipeg's a lot bigger than 2 miles or 10 miles even, a 2 mile radius, 200,000 people living.
That is
And you
so
have one precinct.
congested.
So I'm just going to paint the picture. There's a 2 mile radius. There's five police cars now going around. Just we never caught up with the 911 calls in 8 straight hours. We never caught up. There were still 911 calls we hadn't gotten to after 8 hours. So just giving you the kind of the feel there of one thing after the other. And this is what a lot of times you don't understand that when senseless things happen, you know, police are going from one emergency situation to another, and some of them are really, really bad. Some of them are not that big a deal. Some of them, it looks like it's not a big deal, but end up being a big deal. you got to be really on top of your game. And you're in a 2 mile radius where you almost feel like you got to be arresting people every minute of every hour
Crazy.
because the parks are closed. They're drug infested and dangerous. And schoolyards, there's nowhere for them to go. So these people are generally in front of their buildings and they're drinking and they're smoking weed and all this crack and all this other stuff. And there's just a small selection of people, but they kind of set the tone.
Yeah.
And, on the people side of it, in all fairness to them, it's like, the parks are closed. There's nowhere for them to go. You're living, a lot of people in a small space. So already physicality, kind of like a hockey rink. Like, no wonder why there's fighting in hockey. You're in this rink with,
Totally.
eight, nine
Sardines.
grown men. Of course, you're going to be bumping into each other at some point. And that's how I look at some of these areas that I went around in the Bronx and Brooklyn and Manhattan. Like, there's just a lot of people in a small space. And it gets a little intense.
So you developed an appreciation for what the police are doing out there then. But I was laughing, and I just want to be clear. I'm laughing at the thought of you being thrown into these situations that you never imagined that you would ever be in. It sounded like a reality TV show.
It could have been. I mean, you got to remember, I put myself in there, but also I wanted to see the people's side of it all, which is interesting too. And also, like, you start doing these ride-alongs, and you forget that you're not a police officer. Like, I'm in the middle of sometimes with certain things, negotiating or trying to get things square. And the officers look at me like, but I got comfortable with the whole thing. I'd say I love the police. I mean, but also love the people in these communities too, because I know there's so much talent and so much potential and so much when I see there's so much juvenile crime going on in these cities, which kills me because a lot of the adults will put the juveniles in a position to do the crimes because they get their records cleaned up when they're 19. So you see a tremendous amount of juvenile crime where the kids are doing the crimes for the adults, which really kills me. So these juvenile delinquency centers where the kids are staying are packed. It's really bothersome to me. We took a gang down. Give you an example, like some of the stuff. Like, I get a call, like, we're going to call you at 11 o'clock. We're going to be taking this gang down. We're arresting 24 gang members simultaneously because you can't arrest one. We're going in all at the same time, pulling them right out of their beds. And I'm like, I mean, nervous as all hell. Like, I don't know. And I go in this like undisclosed place where I have no idea where I was going. And all of a sudden, it's this light and it's like these 100 police officers there. And they had this whole 45-minute meeting about what we were about to do, and then we went and arrested 23 out of the 24 kids. What scared me, what was crazy, as we're pulling these gang members out of their houses, gang members that were shooting senselessly, where school buses were in the way, shooting in the wide open public, some of them killing other people, wounding other people, like just senseless crime. But what scared me is that we're in the police station and arresting these and booking them. The lack of any kind of remorse, of fear, nothing. Like they like, we're getting out. Like, and they weren't getting out this time because this is a very well thought out takedown to take these gang members off the street. But it just bothered me that here's 23 like young. I'm sure any one of these kids could be a vice president of a company one day. And here they are, like running the gamut of crime and killing and drugs. And it really hit me because there was no sense of fear or anything like they felt like they did anything wrong, just anger and just yelling and spitting at the police. And it was just really sad to see that. But I'm also glad to know that we took 23 really serious criminals off the street and that
That's amazing.
area is a lot better for it. Yeah.
That's all they know. That's all they know. And that's really sad. They don't know the other side of what life could be. They've never been set up for success to go out in the world and thrive. But oh my God, I can't even imagine what an experience that would have been for you. So you did that how many times? 15 times.
Well, I did the ride-alongs 15 times, the gang, and then I did like a police academy. Those additional days. Like the police academy was unbelievable. The New York City Police Academy is state of the art to watch how these officers got trained and all the things that go on with some of these rookie police officers, which, I think it's important, how you train, how you get started, but there's so much emphasis now because of officers that are older leaving.
Right.
You 20 years, you leave, and they are leaving. If you read the end of the book, I get into a whole bunch of solutions about what I think needs to happen for urban policing to make it better. And one thing I try to express to people is that crime is really expensive. To ignore crime, like we're talking about all this deficits and tariffs and money. I'm like,
Right.
how about just reducing crime? Like, you know how expensive it is to arrest somebody? It's insane. And I'm going to give you an example, Lisa.
Yes, please
You have
do.
a couple that are fighting, which, by the way, everybody seems to be fighting with everybody. You can't get along. Nobody can get along with anybody here. And I'm not speaking for Canada, but it certainly feels that way in the United States. Like, so many domestic violence issues. To
Makes
give you an
sense.
example, every ride along I did, there were at least 40 or 50% domestic violence issues,
Wow,
which is
okay.
really sad. And
Very sad.
what makes it complicated is most of them, not all, were the woman calling and saying, I'm in danger. So you go, and I'm a pretty smart guy, and I'm listening, and I don't know who's lying. I can't get my arms wrapped around. There was one detective, there were two detectives, rather, in a precinct that I was interviewing. Each one of them had, in one precinct, there's 100 precincts in the, each of them had 300 domestic violence cases they were working on each, just for the year
Wow,
alone. I don't
please.
know if people realize how rampant domestic violence still is going on. So I'm listening to this banter, and what happens is the woman changes her mind. Oh, well, it's not that bad. Well, the problem is that once you call and report a domestic violence issue, somebody is going either to the emergency room for a psych evaluation or to jail. There is no turning back. Oh, everything's okay. No. That's,
As it should be,
it has to
yes.
be. So
It has
now
to,
you
yeah.
have a police officer that's now got to go with that person, either to the emergency room. Now an ambulance has to come.
Oh, wow.
And you have one, you're losing an officer for a few hours now to take that person, or then you bring him to jail. Then you got to bring him to central booking. Then you got him in front of a judge. Then they're back out the next day, committing the same crime again at some point a couple of days later. Not enough therapy, not enough. There needs to be a lot more therapy and mental health crisis management going on in a lot of these neighborhoods. When people have money, they get marriage counseling, you get help. In these poor neighborhoods, there's no counseling and therapy and help and teaching the people how to have a pr appropriate marriage and how to deal with conflict. And this is just going on rampantly in so many of these cities that people can't get along. And the expense of this is outrageous. Not to
That
mention
is.
just the whole bad juju of the whole thing. And we're dealing
Yeah.
with domestic violence every ride along, just one domestic violence case after the other, one more crazier than the next. He hit me with a
Wow.
computer. She hit me with a frying pan. I mean, it was just crazy.
Oh my God.
And things elevate
I'm
because you
laughing
go in these
again, but it's
homes.
like, this
You,
is
you,
not funny, but I'm laughing because of like you just I'm imagining you just seeing this from an outsider's perspective because you're not used to this. So you're like, you must have just been like, what the heck is going on? Like you saw a whole new world.
you go in the, you go in these homes, and I'm just giving you the peripheral of it, but there are guns, the people that have guns. You
Yeah.
don't know because when you get into a serious argument, if you've ever done this, fortunately, I've had very minimal amount of arguments with my wife in general. But when you get into a really die-hard argument with the person you love, the screws get a little loose. You
Those,
got a
yeah.
gun in the house. This is how that thing starts spiraling, and then one of you,
Yeah.
then you realize you're going to jail, which you didn't even realize your wife called to complain about you, and now things are
Right.
spiraling even more. So there's a lot of
Right.
danger involved in that. There's a lot of cameras in these cities, so that kind of picks up a lot of stuff. And you most importantly, like, there's a lot of cases that are very marginal where you really have to use good judgment. And this is where you get into the police don't do enough, or the police are being too heavy-handed, and you're almost in a catch-catch. Like, how much? I'm like, we got to arrest everybody, and the police officer's like, we can't arrest that. We'd be all day doing paperwork, and we got to prioritize. And there's so
Right.
many things that happen. Like, here, one kid smoking weed, blowing the weed in the police officer's face, nothing we could do.
Jeez.
And then on the stoop, 2 feet down there's a person having drinks with their friends, sitting there peacefully. However, you're not allowed to have an open bottle of alcohol. In New York
Yeah.
City, you're not allowed. So now we gotta now either give them a summons, probably not gonna arrest them, but we gotta take the liquor away. Now we got into that kind of conflict, and they're getting a little pissed. And you get into those, that's what's kind of going on now, also, where the people are taking advantage of the marijuana rules and laws,
Oh,
and they're kind
totally.
of a little abusive on that. So you got all kinds of things, and then I'll get into one more outrageous story. I mean, there's just so many, but we're driving, and all of a sudden we get a call. There's a shooting, a robbery and a shooting. Now I'm in the police car. We're going 100 miles an hour on both sides of the road, and now I'm at a high level of like, holy shit, what did I get myself into? This is like so freaking scary. And we're driving, and finally we pull up in the middle of the Bronx, and we pull up on the sidewalk, and we get out, and we're about to walk towards where that crime had been. Where the shooting had happened, and out of nowhere shoots a BMW. I'm telling you that how this car did not hit the police officer and or me or both, it was that close. I mean, I don't think you could fit more than a foot between where the car was and us, and that police officer was pissed. And we're thinking that's the guy who did the shooting. So now I'm standing like in shock because the car almost hit me. And then, literally, I don't know how it didn't even hit the officer. Now we're looking at each other like, we got to go get this guy. Now we're back in the car on another chase. Now we're chasing this car. I'm like, God, help me. What is going to happen here? And we're chasing this guy, these guys, there were four of them in the car like for 2 miles. And finally, they pull in, and apparently, they have the guy that shot in the car. And we pull into the hospital. There's another police officer car in front of us, and now the guy's in a complete fisticuffs, the guy driving and the police officer. And there's three other thug-like guys in the car that get out, and then there's four of us. And I'm ready to go. The sergeant's like, oh, slow down. Because you get so amped up. And that's what I really
Your
want to impress
adrenaline's
upon.
pumping.
Your adrenaline's pumping. So imagine, I'm not a trained person, but imagine how it must be for the police officer. You're not, when you're chasing somebody that you think have committed a serious crime and they're not stopping. Your adrenaline, when you're in this chase, you're putting cars and people at risk. And that's when crazy shit happens. And sometimes you read about stories where police officers have been overly aggressive, maybe. But it's not by accident out of nowhere that some of that stuff gets prompted. So anyway, we go. So, finally now we we finally realized that the person who's got shot, he brings in the emergency room. Now I'm in the emergency room with this guy's bleeding all over the place. We're trying to get a statement from him. And I'm like, oh my God, I don't know what I got myself into. And that's just part of the story. You got to read the rest of the book, but it's, and then everybody's lying. Everybody's lying. Oh, I was just
Of
there.
course.
I happened to be, I was just, meanwhile, the guy was in the shooting. Like he was part of the shooting. Like it's just, there's so many dangerous things going on now in urban America that allows criminals to really not get caught and to not get put away. And it makes it very difficult for the police to do their job. And then there's a lot of innocent people living in these communities that deserve better, that need a better investment, that need things to be safer, and they get caught in the middle. Really sad.
How does the police keep up their their mental health and their what is it like? What are they like? Because I can't imagine being around that all the time and my mental health would be on point. Like that must be difficult. So how do they keep their what's the word I'm looking for? Rapport? Like how do they keep in a good mood or what are they like?
I mean, they're pretty good. I mean, they're pretty upbeat. I think it's somewhat selfless in a lot of ways. And then sometimes they get caught in these really bad situations where they become the bad guys and they're being spat at, cursed at. There's a tremendous amount of, not a huge amount, but there's a really good amount of suicide going on with police officers because of the work they do, what they see, and the lack of appreciation for it. It used to be an honor and the ultimate respect you have for a police officer. And also, you're in the middle of seeing r some really just bad life, a bad part of life when you go into some of these communities. In all fairness to the people that are living there, it's not good. It's when you see hopelessness and desperateness, people that are living that have no hope, no shot of ever getting out of that community. And you wonder why they slide into gang or violence or not being productive. I feel like we just got to get back into our to really help these people. Schools, libraries, hospitals are all very, very run down. And I just can't imagine this is what's going on in our cities. And it's not just New York, but I got a very close view in New York that has as complicated in New York, a complex police system in New York as you can imagine to keep us
Okay.
safe, and
Yeah.
still probably not enough.
How did this experience change your life?
Well, I've been kind of investing a lot. I've always been interested in investing in the Boys and Girls Clubs and things like that. And always, trying to also rebuild a lot of the precincts around the city because they're beat up, they're old, and they need a boost. When, in these neighborhoods, when you have a problem, unlike when you get into, rural areas, like you go to the police department, that's where you go and you meet with
Yeah.
officers. And these places are just terrible. They're run down. And so one of my goals with the proceeds of the book is to raise money to do more of these precincts. I've done five of them so far, and I hope to do a lot more. And then also, like, you just can't put enough money in Boys and Girls Clubs or YMCAs and places for kids to go that are safe, where they can grow and be kids, and otherwise, where are you going? Nowhere safe. There's nowhere to go at home. These homes are, these apartments are really crowded. So it changed my perspective. Yeah, I mean, just because you lived in a city at one point in your life doesn't mean you have any idea what's going on. At least I can speak
Oh,
for myself. I'm a
me
born and
too.
bred, Brooklyn's the fourth largest city in the country. I know. I went areas in Brooklyn I had never been to before, and I couldn't believe my eyes what I was seeing. So
Right.
I'm hoping this book gets a conversation going and people start realizing that we have to get a better relationship with communities and police. It's not just the police are great. No. We have to train our police better. There's a bunch of stuff that I write about in the book that the police need to do better. We need to put the police in a better position to do better. And we need to help these people more. We need to do more and not do more. I'm sorry, scrap that. Nobody wants to do more for a lot of these people that are really in intense levels of poverty. I say invest more. Invest more. Let these people know that they're worthwhile, the individuals, that they have a future and a potential if they want to go after it. So we can lose the hopelessness. We can't solve all the problems, but when you see the schools and some of these streets and stuff, we got to invest more. It was very scary. Like, you go in a neighborhood like this, and all you got is liquor stores, check cashing places, and some fast food. After 8 o'clock, everything's closed because you're getting robbed.
Yeah.
You can't stay open. Like, I mean, you can't imagine. It set me back. I was excited to do the book, but it kind of messed my head up a little bit to know that
Absolutely.
there's this kind of stuff going on in our country.
It makes your stomach turn, it makes you feel sick thinking that that is how people live their life every single day. Bars on their windows, gunshot noises. And then our police officers are going into these situations every single day.
Every single moment of every day. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite experience? I don't know if I want to use the word favorite, but do you have one that sticks out the most for you?
I think that one of the favorite things is when I was at one of the precincts, and there was this lady that called about domestic violence, and she had cancer. She was really sick. And what I loved is that the police officers went in after they dealt with that domestic violence case and went back and brought the lady groceries and brought the lady some help. There's a lot of community connection. And what bothers me the most is that you hear about the really, really bad stuff. And I get it. Somebody gets shot, somebody gets killed. It's a senseless crime, a senseless murder. But you don't hear about all the good stuff that the police do in the communities that save a life or just out of acts of kindness go and help people that are in real deep trouble. And it should be an honor, and we should honor our police officers. But we also should respect the people that are less fortunate that are left out and look to help them in some way or another. And it would make the whole thing a lot easier. Not let the police be the scapegoats. They're not perfect. There's some work to be done there too. But I think if we keep letting that be, at some point, this crime coming up your way. It's not getting less and less. The complications in crime and the ability where people think they can get away with things is just increasing dramatically. And I'm just hoping that we can kind of get that minimized for no other reason than crime is expensive. It's not good.
Yeah, I couldn't. You kind of illustrated that with there's a domestic violence call. So then that police officer has to go to the hospital. So then I'd like that's just one small instance of that. And that happens, as you said, all the time, all day long. And they're working long hours. Is there like a limit of time that they can work during the, like a police officer? Can they only work for a certain time?
I mean,
Or
they
are they
try.
normally on like
The
overtime?
average police officer only makes a little over $100,000. I mean, the police officers that work out in more rural actually make more, which is a problem. Although they just did get a raise, but most officers make 100. If you've been there a while, you're in a little over $100,000 a year. That's your kind of your high for your unless you're going to get the overtime. So a lot of them will
Crazy.
work a lot of overtime and try to work overtime. My goal is after 20 years, I want to be able to, a police officer to start getting their pension and stay on board. Because they're
Okay.
leaving after 20 years and then they go and they get another job with security or something else. And I'm like, no. Let them get their pension after 20 or 25 years and let them work an additional 5 years where they're getting two salaries. They've earned it. We need the older police officers, the men and women that have experience, especially with domestic violence. It's tough when you got a 25-year-old kid coming in your house with a couple that's in their 40s arguing and fighting. And I'm going to listen to some 25-year-old kid. I
Yeah.
mean, it's a complete mess, and that's what's happening rampantly. And that when you have the older officers around, they're just at a level of experience that you can't put a price tag on, and we have to do a better job of keeping them.
Yeah, you said experience, right? And understanding. Definitely. Wow. So you wrote this book and what an experience. So when is, oh, there it is right there, the ride alongs. What I learned about
As
policing crime. Yeah, what I learned about policing crime and the New York justice system. Love that. And
interviewed
let's see
some
the back.
judges, interviewed some lawyers. There's my police jacket on, but my
I was
bulletproof
gonna
vest.
say you had a
Yeah.
bulletproof vest on the whole time.
Oh, 100%.
Is it
Every time
heavy?
I
What's it
went somewhere,
like?
they
What's
thought
it
that I
like?
was the boss. I'm older now, and they're
You're
like,
the
I
chief.
want to talk to your supervisor, that man over there. Bring him over here. I can't say how many people like demanding that I come over, and I'm like, they're like, you're not going over there. I said, I can be your boss. Come on. And then one guy was like really belligerent about it. Like, I want that guy. I know he's somebody. I can't. I know he's somebody. You get that guy to come over here because he's the guy I'm going to talk to. I'm not talking to you.
You
Oh
could
boy,
be
we're.
like a Sipowicz. You're like just like a detective. You look like a chief. You could be a police chief for sure. What's
Yeah.
it like
So, I
wearing the
mean,
vest?
it's just kind of reminds you of the danger you're in every minute and
I guess, yeah,
what it does.
crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And also, like now when I walk around, not to say that you should have to do this, but now when I walk around or I see a police car driving around or just in general, I'm looking at walking down the street in New York much differently. Because I know there's all kinds of shenanigans going on. Usually you don't pay attention, but I did one day in a police and it was a police station in Times Square subway station. And that's like because I think there's nine entrances and exits to that station, and I don't know how many millions of people go through there and the crime that's going on in there. And if something goes wrong there's all kinds of problems. But I just look at things differently now as I'm walking down the street or when I'm in one of these neighborhoods and I'm seeing what's really going on. Instead of just being kind of oblivious to whatever's going on, which most of us do, we're not really
Yeah.
paying attention. But now, like even when I'm driving or when I'm walking, I'm paying a little bit different kind of attention to what's going on. And
So the book is coming out September 15th, 2025. Is that correct?
yes, there'll be some. There's pre-orders. You can go on Amazon and pre-order now, even and on Collectible Exchange, my company that we're a marketplace for collectibles. If you have any hockey collectibles you want to sell, we have a really very vibrant, big. We haven't got into my sports marketing career, but there's a lot of stuff on my website if you're a sports fan. CollectibleExchange.com. But you can pre-order the book on CollectibleExchange.com, or you can go on eBay. I'm not eBay, or Amazon or Barnes and Noble and order the book. This is my fourth book, so I'm literally like one of my first interviews that I've done, if not my first. I only like mentioned it on another interview once, but so I really appreciate Lisa taking the time to go over it, and now it's got me thinking about some of how I want to talk about this book as I'm doing my first with you, and I think that This is a very quick read. I'm not that smart a person. I'm half illiterate growing up, and I struggled with reading and writing. So I love having the four books, and I've written like 2,500 blogs. I love doing all the shit that people tell me I can't do. Particularly what thrilled me up is
Yes.
when my wife said she didn't want me doing it. I'm like, all right, I'm doing it. You know, my kids are like,
Oh.
Dad, don't do this. This is stupid. I'm like, okay, I'm doing it. But because
Oh,
everybody told me not to
man.
do it. Yeah, everybody told me not to do it. But it's a very easy read, is what I wanted to get to. And that is, I'm not a I'm an easy when I write and I do stuff like this, you really it's very digestible content. You can read this book in a couple hour plane ride, or it's a very easy book to read, and it gives you a very, very good picture of some stuff that you may want to be knowledgeable about. You know, it's like you don't really think much about the police until you need them. Then they become the
Exactly.
most important people in your life. And we should remember that, you know, because when shit goes down, it's the 911 call, whatever, all of a sudden they become everything. So, like, they should be everything all the time. And we should teach our children, at the very least, you know, to make sure to respect the police. And even though there's a couple of bad things that have gone wrong, a few police officers make a mistake, we shouldn't judge the whole force in whatever country you're living in by a couple of bad apples.
Absolutely. You know, I'm so excited to dive into I might have a PDF copy in my email sitting there right now, and
Yeah.
I'm gonna blow through that tonight. I just love your the way you tell stories, and I'm really excited to dive into this. And percentage of the proceeds are gonna go to the Boys and Girls Clubs
Yeah,
and
Boys and
the
Girls Club and the
NYPD.
precincts. Yeah, and then you're going to redo some more of the precincts. I'm going to try to do as many as I can as the book sales come in. And I love redoing the precincts because they desperately need the makeover, and they're good for the community too.
Beautiful. Oh my God, Brendan, thank you so much for being here today and talking about this experience.
Well, thank
I
you.
got a good laugh, but in all seriousness, the work that the police are doing is absolutely, mandatory, and it's crucial. And I do feel for them and the people out there that are struggling. So let's try and do better.
Thank you. I appreciate the time, and I look forward to getting your feedback, and hopefully, you know, hopefully people pick up on it and it makes a little bit of a difference.
It definitely will. It definitely will. I believe it.
Thank you. Contact me online. I'm an easy guy to get a hold of, LinkedIn or Instagram. I'm one of those, not a typical older person, but I'm posting every day on LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter. So just message me. I'm happy to answer any questions or keep in touch.
Perfect. We'll make sure to have those links in your show notes.
Thank
And
you.
yeah, thank you. And to our audience, you just heard from Brandon Steiner, and his book is in pre-sale right now. We'll have a link for that in our show notes as well. But I know I'm going to dive into it tonight. So thanks again. And thanks, everyone. Bye for now.
Thank you, thank you.